we really believe in that data need to be accessible. So we're an API first company, meaning that we deliver data through these API keys so they can be integrated into any software or system or digital surfaces so that you can showcase climate data to your employees, put it into your inventory system so you can start seeing like what is it that actually is the most green initiative product or initiative. Or you could also then integrate it to your website so that you could communicate and engage your users or your customers, consumers. So in a way, we are a B2B2C solution in that sense. But very flexible in that way that we cover all of a footprint of an individual, meaning that we have databases that cover food and drink, food waste, the industry that you're in. We have the energy, we have the financial and consumption, but we also have the transport and mobility part. So we're very flexible. And that is maybe our strength today, that we have data sets that can cover like full inventory lists with good enough granulated data so that you're able to use it for reporting or for communication towards your customers or suppliers.
Welcome to the podcast From Farm to Fork by Total Control. My name is Ricardo Monagas, and I will be your host. On this podcast, we will talk with leaders in the hospitality industry, managers in the municipalities institutions, investors, farmers, producers, and disruptors in the food sector. We will get to know their journeys, ways to be more sustainable, streamline their food inventory management, prevent food waste, and other important points in their day-to-day operations. Thanks for joining us, and let's get started. Hi, everyone. Today, we're talking with Silje Solberg. She is the co-founder and sustainability expert at Doki. Doki is a startup working in combining established behavioral science footprint data and technology to mobilize individuals and organizations to take direct actions toward reducing climate emissions every single day. So, welcome, Silje. How are you?
Thank you, Ricardo. No, I'm actually feeling very great now that all of this sickness is over. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me. This is cool.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for your time. So, Silje, I think today we will be talking about a lot towards what is your journey in sustainability, and what is Doki, of course, and what are your plans and challenges and progress into this, right? Because not everything is quite simple, right? As we know in a startup world. So maybe let's start first. Yeah, what is Doki? And yeah, I did this short intro, but maybe it's better to hear it from your perspective.
We mainly introduce ourselves as the leading climate tech business in Norway. And we combine, as you said, behavioral science, but we also combine science on how you communicate actions, so the climate communication science. And of course, we provide more or less climate-leading data so that we're able to actually state what does it mean, these different actions that individuals and businesses do on an everyday basis, and the summary of that. So yeah, I guess that's a short intro.
Good. And yeah, how does it start the journey of Doki? So this is something that you, as a co-founder, who think the idea, and maybe, yeah, what is your current role as a sustainability expert in the company?
Okay, let's do the start first. Well, it started in 2013, which is like 10 years ago to this year. And this was like a growing under concern from me personally. And then I had met my boyfriend at that time, which is my current husband and also co-founder in Doki. And he had joined his first workplace, where he also met Mats the third, co-founder. So like all of us getting together, we kind of like started growing this common concern of like, okay, what can I do as an individual? This is the like the biggest challenge of our time. Why aren't the politicians doing anything? Why doesn't the companies start like producing more sustainable products, services? You know, like this doesn't make sense. Why is it the status quo still, right? So there was this growing concern, and we all come from more like product development backgrounds, meaning that we have this user-centered approach with us. And if you deep dive enough, you can start like understanding what's actually standing in the way. And in 2014, we learned that up until then, there hadn't been any data sourcing, like what does it mean as an individual? If we bike to work or like took the car to work or ate more vegetarian, what does that actually mean emission-wise? So the data was finally available. And then we also had learnings from psychology and climate communication that kind of was brought into the pot at that time. So everything kind of went together, and we were seeing that one of the main challenges for making change is that the narrative is so depressing. It's really so hard to relate to on an everyday basis. It was like the polar bear, and you're like, it was like this catastrophic storytelling, which didn't really apply to us at all. So we were like saying, okay, that's a problem. And then the second one was like, okay, we can't even measure what an individual do. And we established very far, like, an understanding that, okay, if you look at it from a perspective, all of the world consists of individuals, you know, like doing actions every day. So not engaging us and not bringing the individual on board in change, like addressing this large challenge, that's wrong. It's really not going to happen. We're not going to get where we need to get. So that was kind of the motivation. We were seeing like, okay, this, it's a lack of something. So we started a journey with some digital development, and like got to a point where like, okay, communicating this digitally in different surfaces. We were, of course, going through like, oh, there need to be an app, but we bypassed that at some time. But yeah, that was more or less the journey. And then September, I think it was 2014, we founded Ducky because we had done a lot of like testing on some prototypes, and we're like, okay, we're sure there's something here. Let's start this journey. So yeah. And today, you were asking about me and my role today. Well, as a startup, you know, you do all of the things. I think I've done everything these last 10 years, but today I'm in a role of head of customer success, meaning that I am able to follow up all of our customers, some of them more closely, some of them like on a more time-to-time basis, but guiding and advising on how to use our tools in the best way. So that means also that I'm able to talk to what is it that's standing in the way for businesses today, making more green actions in-house or helping their customers.
Okay. And if we can go now deeper into the solution of Ducky. So if I understand you well, right now at the moment you have different APIs that you can calculate or calculate what is the emissions that are happening in different processes of a company, right? At the moment you are focusing only on B2B, or you are also collaborating in some work towards B2C. So how does it work? And if you can explain us a bit, yeah, more the how at the moment.
Yeah. No, we've had the journey that we really believe in, that the data need to be accessible. So we're a API first company, meaning that we deliver data through these API keys so they can be integrated into any software or system or digital surfaces, so that you can showcase climate data to your employees, put it into your inventory system so you can start seeing like what is it that actually is the most green initiative product or initiative. Or you could also then integrate it to your website so that you could communicate and engage your users or your customers, consumers. So in a way, we are a B2B2C solution in that sense, but very flexible in that way that we cover all of a footprint of an individual, meaning that we have databases that cover food and drink, food waste, the industry that you're in. We have the energy, we have the financial and consumption, but we also have the transport and mobility part. So we're very flexible. And that is maybe our strength today, that we have data sets that can cover like full inventory lists with good enough granulated data so that you're able to use it for reporting or for communication towards your customers or suppliers.
Okay. And yeah, how did you decide to collaborate in each of these industries? It was a matter of, yeah, finding the opportunities with companies in each of these industries, or yeah, how was the story behind that? Like, how do you decide that you go to food industry? How do you decide you go to transportation? It was maybe because they have a bigger impact into the emissions that they're creating, or yeah.
Actually, what we see in the food industry is that this is a more mature market. Talking about emissions and how to nudge consumers in picking more green foods or reducing food waste, that's happened for a while. So that's the reason why we made that decision 1.5 years ago. And I guess we started talking at that time as a very natural transition into that with you guys in Total Control. So of course it is about when a market is mature, then it's easier for us to help, right? Because then they have most likely a budget to use for something like this. They also have the organization is more or less on board on this. They might have a strategy already. So then it's easier to actually come with a solution. So we see different types of like levels of maturity in different types of industries. So the food industry is definitely ahead, especially in Sweden. We're seeing that and in the Norwegian market as well.
Okay. And how does it work at the moment, like the collection of data? Because of course, we have experienced the challenge also from Total Control perspective that the companies are conscious that they need to, of course, deliver or improve their sustainability practices, right? But then at the end of the day, let's say the suppliers maybe are not sending the data or yeah, so there are a lot of silos, right, on data. So
definitely,
so yeah. What are your challenges on this, and yeah, how are you trying to solve those challenges? I assume that the API is a way to solve that, right, because it's more open for integration, right? But
yeah, no, there's pros and cons with both. Like there is of course solutions which have dashboards, and then there's easier for maybe smaller companies to like access that and like take out more manually those data. So we've been by saying that we're addressing API first, that means that we're a very good solution for IT systems that have larger bulks of inventory systems. And also maybe a larger bulk of the customers again. So, for example, you're such an IT system, meaning that delivering our climate data to you guys, meaning that you will be able to feed climate data into your customers through you. So that's more or less our mindset, that we need to address those that have in-house competency or like technical developers so that they can actually do some of that integration, which you just have to do once, but you have to get to that point. Not small medium businesses doesn't necessarily do that, and they don't have the the capacity to pay for externals either. So we try that, but then we see that it's easier to feed out and reach out to more people through systems where they're already in. For example, they have a relationship to you guys. They, for example, you use your ERP system. We deliver our climate data into that so that then you can get your emissions to your financial transactions in that ERP system. We deliver to banks, meaning like using a consumer. That's where you already have your relationship. So then you can get your data there. So that's been our strategy. And we see that if we're going to get data out fast enough, we need to partner up with those systems that is already being used and is necessary for our day-to-day operations for businesses.
Okay.
I don't know if that actually answered your question, but at least that's where I ended.
I think it's okay, because I think the only way is that everyone accept that they need to go integration via API, right? That's maybe the easiest way to achieve this, instead of everyone not communicating with systems, which is easy to say, right? But then the implementation takes time, right?
Depending on
the willingness of every company, the priorities and stuff like that.
Not everyone has one person working with implementing climate data or like that. So it needs to be easy and needs to be accessible. And I think also what's really good about an API integration is that you don't need to send us any personal data. You keep your data on your end, and that means that we deliver only the data itself. You don't have to have any personality policy contracts and all of that. So it's easier to do that way.
Okay. So can you walk us through some use case that you are currently working on, and that maybe for you have been proud till now? What is the best for you?
When I started Ducky, one of my closest to heart areas has been behavior change, and I've been working with scientists closely. So actually seeing customers of ours taking the step where they're nudging consumers in the end, that makes me pretty happy. So we're working a lot in the mobility area right now, currently having these mobility regional packages as our customers. So I'm talking a lot to Miljöpacken in Trøndelag, and they have these attitude, or what you call it, campaigns where they inform citizens about something, and then that is the way of kind of nudging towards a change of mobility behavior. So now we're reviewing that with different actors, and we're more or less pitching a more step-to-step test-based approach to these type of citizens campaigns. And since this has been close to my heart for 10 years, it's so fun to work with these guys that they've been working with it, but it's not working that hard. So by us being able to add data and targeting some groups, and then working with the communication part there to target the message, and using data also to nudge the end user, that really makes me personally vibrant, because I think that's fun. But at the other end, I also think several of these circular companies that we've been working with and delivering data to this last year, Bua, for example, that rent out sports equipment mainly to get kids socially into joining different things at school or at leisure time, but they were also a circular example of how we as individuals don't need to own everything. Like, in, for example, ice skating, you can rent that for a week or a weekend instead of actually buying, right? So what we're helping them with is to concretely showcase the emission savings from that kind of green initiative, that circular initiative, for you as a consumer into their website. So when you log in, you can actually see like, okay, you've saved this much CO2, from a climate perspective. And I like helping them communicate that, to the end user. And I think that's going to be, developed and launched in the first quarter next year. So that's also a case that, that really makes me proud, because then we're supporting the green initiatives that exists and try to like help them lift up and communicate the benefits of that. So yeah, as an example.
Okay. Yeah. And just now maybe going deeper into the data of climate data, what does it mean? So from my understanding, of course, there are an agreement internationally that there are these different carbon emissions scopes, right? And so can we talk about these emissions scope, what do they mean? And yeah, and how, for example, using the example of the kids and the, renting some sport equipments, yeah, how do you calculate that data? What does it mean, the data into these scopes?
Well, products and services are fit into the scope 3. And it's the greenhouse gas protocol, the GHG reporting system. So that's like the downstream. I you kind of divide scopes into like your direct emissions and your indirect emissions. So the products and services that you as a company deliver would be then part of the scope 3 reporting part. And then the scope 1 and 2 is like the direct emissions that you have within your control or your ownership in a way as a business. So like in simple senses, that means like scope 1 is what type of fuel you burn within like the housings or the offices or the production areas that you have. And then the scope 2 is type of fuels that you burn within of all of your mobility. Trucks, your cars, your that kind of stuff. And then the third one is the biggest for everyone, and that's what's being brought in now with the new laws and regulations coming from the EU taxonomy and the CSRD regulative. So from 1st of January, that will be mandatory for bigger companies throughout Europe, so it's coming. But as a small medium businesses, you will most likely be asked to deliver your emissions from the part that you as a supplier to your customers. So but then you also have, so that's the upstream part. So the downstream is like the products and services, and the upstream part is the you as a supplier, or the emissions coming from what you do in the supply chain.
Okay, so in the context of the use case that you have mentioned, it would mean that the number that you are showing the website for the consumers or for the people renting is basically how much they are saving in the production of that equipment, or is about the transportation of buying something? Yeah, or?
No, that's different. Mm-hmm. So in order for us to communicate and nudge end users, we have to use footprint emissions. Mm-hmm. And that's in sense of how much you as a consumer, you as a citizen emit. So it's two ways of actually calculated emissions. So it's super hard. If you don't work within the sustainability area, you will probably be confused of this. But the way that all of this like accounting for emissions happen is like conceptually made like, okay, this is your company and the emissions you emit within there, that's what you're going to account for. But in order for us to act, like, then you account for stuff that is happening within that border and not thing that comes from abroad, for example. That will now happen with the scope three. You will get your suppliers in China or, you know, like Eastern Europe or something. You will need that data into there. So that's a good step. But then in order for us to communicate this to users, we need the footprint way of calculating it. That means that, for example, if you normally, if you normally would use 1,000 kroners for different types of sports equipment every year, like we have general numbers on behaviors from typical Norwegian, right? And then we have broken that into different areas of Norway and down to municipalities and even neighborhoods, so that we could communicate, like, if you do actually rent this, we could say that you would most probably save this much, like, for example, 70 kilos of CO2 not buying them. So you kind of communicate that in a different way. And then you make it more personal and it's more relatable. From an emission perspective, that's not possible. So that's what I was talking about in the beginning, right? That way of calculating didn't exist until like 2014, meaning that we didn't have any tools to involve us as consumers to start taking more green actions. So that's that's a different way of showcasing.
Okay, sounds good. And you have mentioned that there is upcoming regulations in the EU from January of, well, just in 1 month from now, more or less.
So that's true. Today.
Yeah. What does it mean for the companies at this point, that regulation is only about the reporting of emissions in a specific scope, and who should be taking case of this?
First of all, the regulations only takes place for the bigger companies, those that are børsnotert. Oh, don't get my name on from the top of my head, but then it also, so there's a little amount of bigger companies that will need to now also report on the scope three. But we don't necessarily know the indirect effects of the supply chain around all of these bigger companies. So that's what's going to be interesting to see now in 2024 going out, like, how will this start making climate data, emission, more strategies into the small, medium businesses? Like, how will this affect, like, indirectly affect and ripple off into all of the companies that are related to these big ones? So I guess in a year time from now, we will start to see, like, how this regulation has had the effect of the whole market. But we've been making ourselves ready for that, so that it's going to be easy for the smaller businesses as well to access data. And most likely, and then we know that in 2026, then there will be regulations for small, medium businesses also. So there are step by step now coming regulations from EU. And we know, like, up until now, the carrot hasn't really worked, right? So it needs to be put into place regulations so that this is going to be, like, prioritized in businesses. And then when that's in place, more and more companies will use that as a way of guiding, making choices, like what supplier to use, right? Okay, this supplier is actually so big on this emissions on that type of linen, or, you know, like, they're producing vegetables with higher emissions than this one. Okay, I actually need to choose that one. So then we start getting the system working a bit more. So I guess in a couple of more years, we'll start seeing ripple effects of this, which is super cool. And I'm very excited about the change that's coming now. Oh, I don't think I can hear you.
Yeah, sorry, it's my fault.
There you are.
The microphone off and I didn't notice because, yeah, so, yeah, so I have not been that familiarized with the EU regulations at this point, but basically, yeah, what does it mean for, yeah, let's say the certain industries or certain players from corporates, right, start implementing these. Yeah, how do you make that the small companies and mid-sized companies start doing this as well? Because not only about the, yeah, financially, right? Because assuming that connecting to an API, right, you need to still have some development team or some resources, right, to achieve that. And maybe a small company doesn't or cannot afford to have a development team or something like this. So is this something that you are trying to work with to help these small companies in the future towards how to integrate and get to know more about their operations and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think that, first of all, what we're seeing from our customers is that smaller companies as well do have the ability to pay for something that actually adds value through their main services. So, for example, Bua or other companies in the same size, it's no problem to add this this product that we have to their service. It's more like it needs to be prioritized up. So that doesn't seem to be like a showstopper for those that actually see the main value. But for those that aren't like having circular products or services as their main value proposition to their customers, that is not that main priority. So then we we're working with IT systems, for example, your ERP system, your invoicing system, and then you could get climate data that you need for your products or services through them. So it's a different way of approaching it. So for the larger market, that's the way to go, most likely. But again, it's a very immature market yet. But we're seeing signs that it needs to be easy accessible and it needs to be cheap in order for most of the smaller and medium businesses to access it.
And yeah, you have mentioned that you believe that the food industry is more mature into these aspects. Can we go through the different industries and you can tell, like, yeah, what are the progress that you see in each industry, like you have been involved till now?
Well, I don't necessarily have a good answer to that. So what is it that you're thinking about, the progress of delivering more green services and products, or is it what is it that you're thinking of?
Yeah, I'm thinking from the point of view of, yeah, what are the key metrics that maybe these industries are using or are taking more priorities, right? For example, let's say in the energy sector, are they taking care of measuring how much CO2 they are taking to produce energy? Or what are the each of the industries that you have at least certain knowledge, right? What is the key metric that they are trying to improve?
Now, from our company or from our customers, it's to showcase their green offerings in some way. And then what we're also seeing is that several of our biggest customers is now preparing for the regulations coming. So that means that we're also in dialogue with them on how to provide them with easy accessible climate data, like right into their solutions. So I don't necessarily have like a detailed view on different types of industries, but what we're seeing is that that there are more more actors in the HoReCa, the food industry that is already using climate data actively to make choices. And then there's some industries, for example, which is makes sense, right? Because in the food industry, you do have a lot of different food items. And like, how do you choose between that, right? But in the energy industry, you have energy. And that you don't have that much of a choice to choose between. Oh, we're working with some, like a few weeks after one of our customers now to showcase some of their green offerings. So that's coming soon. But again, it's limited because it's energy that we're talking about. So for example, and I think this is the main reason why we're seeing a bit more maturity in the food industry, you could say, because there is a bigger opportunity to choose greener products, but it also is more to choose from, and then you need data to kind of start seeing what is it that we could choose from, right? From the financial perspective, they also limit it in a way. Like for example, bank customers, they don't have that big of a list of green offerings that they can offer to their customers, but they do have green loans. They have green, portfolios where you put your money in, that kind of green offering. So, but it takes a bit more time for them to develop, a proper like a value proposition to showcase that. It's easier with the goods and services and the food industry.
Yeah, of course, that's thousands of different suppliers and each of them are producing stuff in a different way, right?
Yeah, it is. So that, and I guess that's where we're seeing like a perfect match with our databases as well. Like we have a very high granularity on more like general data that could like cover the whole inventory list for example, goods and services and for food. So then it makes sense to use the services as because then you get data for all of those products easily. But if you do only have like 1 to 4 products that you could showcase, then maybe it is better to use LCA analysts and actually get a proper data on that product. But we do supply that into our system as well. But I'm just saying that the goods and services and food industry is more equipped to be giving people better tips and choices, green choices.
Okay. And yeah, apart from the regulation, so is there any incentive from the EU towards aligned to this, or there is just penalties out of that? So how does it, do you know this information? Like,
oh, yeah, actually,
how do
I
you
don't.
Make more?
No, I'm not aware if there's going to be any penalty. So let's follow up on that next time. I'll check that out. Yeah, we've done a pretty good deep dive and we have a good grasp in our team on what's the regulations coming right now, but we will learn for sure. Yeah, throughout 2024 when this starts being put into place.
Got it. Yeah, of course. I am just asking from the point of view that I think it's better to, well, but this is just my opinion, right? This just kind of maybe it's better to guide from the positive side, right? Of saying if you decide to be more green in your operations, then you get certain incentive of, yeah, I don't know, right? I don't know exactly what, but what I'm trying to say is that would be a more positive way to make that the companies put priorities into this.
Yeah.
I'm just saying because a few days back I went to one event about real estate and the status of the real estate industry and this year and kind of forecasting next year. For example, sustainability is not the topic that they have in their top. So it's, they have it maybe second or third, depending on the type of real estate, like commercial, production, or residential, right? That is, of course, each of them have different priorities, but But yeah, none of them have it first. So, which I don't know if that's good or bad, right? But like, yeah.
No, but I think you're actually touching into the status of sustainability today. That businesses do prioritize it up if they do have ambassadors that really burns for this inside of their organization. And that's what we're seeing in all of our other companies that are customers from ours, that they have most likely younger people working with this, and they are actively seeking out how can my organization improve. So it is an engagement from an individual perspective happening within the organization. So for example, we're talking about markets, right? But from what we're saying is that there are actors, some businesses that are taking the lead because they just have started building a culture for it, or they have a mindset like this is something that we are going to make our competitive edge. Or so we're working with Bane NOR, for example, in the mobility sector right now, and they're one of the biggest real estate developers in Norway, and they have put that on top, and they really want to be the best in it. So now we're working with them to showcase, like, okay, how can they develop better neighborhoods or buildings in itself that makes people live greener? And then you need data in order to see, does this initiative work? Is it like, do we need to reduce car parking, but offer, for example, car sharing, looking at neighborhoods, okay, where is the bus stop? What type of people do we build residentials for here? So they start using data that is accessible, and then use that to make decisions on how to build and develop areas. And it's super cool to work with these like front runners, you could say.
Yeah, it sounds exciting to be part of that, of course.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of, even that we are saying that there are challenges, right? But at least the industries are going in certain direction into that way. And of course, it's good that there are coming regulations for sure.
I think that was my point as well, that we have these front runners that does it because they do have some sort of internal engagement, and they put it up because it's being built from downwards up. But then for the masses, regulations needs to happen. So the carrot and stick part, if we need change, we need both, right? We need engagement, we need data, we need laws and regulations getting us to that, because change is so hard. Like, on an everyday basis, I guess this is relatable to changing your behavior as an individual, right? That you have your routines and stuff that you do, right? And it takes time and effort to change something. And that's the same for businesses. So we just need this. So I'm cheering for EU. Thank you, EU.
Good. And you have seen that more companies are having sustainability managers or people related to this role till now, at least in Norway, for example? Or how do you feel into this?
Well, for the almost 10 years that we've been operating within sustainability sphere in Norway, we're seeing that there are coming more and a lot. You could say that the sustainability role is being moved from something that's happening within communications or and then being brought into more a strategic role. So that's a really, really good change, right? Because that means that more and more companies are actually building their future with that as one component of what they need to do. So that's a positive change, I would say. And unfortunately, not all but businesses have one role of it. But at least if you're doing certifications or stuff, you need to have someone with a hat on. But it's being moved into the strategic fair. That's good.
That's great. And now let's switch a bit gears to talk more about your company and yourself, right? So yeah, how does it look your typical day now? So it's something that you are always evaluating the data coming from the customers you are working on, or yeah, can you walk us through what do you do in with your role?
I'm part of a management team, so of course we do look at the holistic part of the company, but my everyday, how does my everyday look like? Well, I tend to like to start my week in a cafe, just to like get a bit of a free space and then look at what's going to happen this week. I normally have like, I don't know, 4 to 6 meetings with customer every week, which is really good. Get to take the temperature every week. On a more like, it's been a bit of a like heavy autumn, you know, like I just had 2 kids, so it's the part about juggling being motherhood and then entrepreneurship is pretty hard when you need to be away like a week with sick kids or sick yourself. But yeah, on a company level, we address change rapidly. So we do have like processes in place when it comes to product development, meaning like our product teams and head of development, we're monitoring the feedback from customers, but also all of our the conversations that we do have with all of companies and potential leads out there, and then we're taking that into consideration, saying like, okay, we have to change this or improve that, and we do that in like 2-week sprints with our full data team of experts and UX designer and developer. So we're pretty agile, I would say. And we, like last year, we sunset a product, our People's Footprint product, because it was not selling as we thought it would be. Municipalities is a pretty hard buy because the processes take so long. So we just had to do that. And we changed focus because we're seeing more traction in the mobility market right now. So we're pretty agile when it comes to where do we have to put our effort. And this also means that we're a small team, right? And you guys know that for sure. So it's always about priorities and what to do.
Got it. Yeah, so maybe we should, before going deeper into the product side, I will take a moment to, you mentioned that you have 2 kids, right? And yeah, maybe in the personal side for some people with families, right? Maybe it could be interesting to how do you try to balance this? I assume it's not perfect, but can you walk us through if you have certain routines about how to achieve this or not really, or any advice for women or guys out there?
Well, I think the first thing that I worked a lot with it is accepting the situation. Like there's always lots to do and responsibility feeling of I should have done that and that. So that's something that I've left behind, and I'm proud of, because that's a part of the like the really balancing act here, is to trying to have a good time at the same time as having a lot to do. So on a day-to-day basis, I've just accepted like, okay, it takes longer time in the morning to get them to kindergarten. And then of course, then I can do my emails in the evening, and that makes sense. Right. So there's a little bit of like, give and take to make the day, get the ends to meet. But I guess it's also fun to see that it's possible, right? You can do this with kids, and it's up to me myself to kind of set the level of expectations. And I guess that's the main thing that I've done. I have had rounds of what does this period of time look like in my life, and how can I contribute best to Ducky that time, and how can I contribute best being a mother? And then at the same time, you know, maintain yourself at some way. So self-reflection, I think, is important.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for sharing. Yeah, of course, it's challenging.
But yeah. There's not enough time.
Yeah, you need 48 hours a day. But in Europe, it's more complicated, right? In winter, because you feel that there is less sunlight, right? So it feels a bit different, right? Compared to summer times with plenty of hours and daylight.
Yeah, daylight does have an effect, but I just realized now that I should have said, like, if you get enough sleep, you could deal with anything. And that's the thing that really needed to put on top of my priorities, to get 7.5 to 8 hours sleep. And then I feel like I can balance the most. So I guess that's my best advice. Don't skip the sleep. It's not like I do that on purpose.
Yeah, I get it. Now I will switch a bit towards the part of your team, right? So you said that your background was first, or part of your team is product background, right? And so how did you come to this thing? Of course, Wang is your husband now, right? But yeah, so do you build the team internally in Norway, or you are working with other people from abroad as well? So how did you come with this composition of your team till now?
It's a really good theme, because this is one of our favorite, and we've been working with this from the start. So we've actually taken the approach where we've been testing out self-development teams, meaning that we're trying to create teams that are self-going and have a lot of autonomy, not being like a top-down driven company, but more like bottom-up approach to it. And that means also that the team composition is super important. And we have failed, of course. So we've iterated on the way that we built our teams. But we have had a main focus on getting people on board that comply each other, so they in skills but also personality traits, because that means that as a team you will be able to kind of like adjust each other. So over the years we've had some people from abroad. So right now we have two people working remotely, one in Belgium and one in the UK. And the rest of us is situated in Trondheim, which has been our main office from the start, and Oslo. But yeah, team composition is far most important. So of course, as a startup, you burn, and then you figure out like, oh, that didn't work, or that person figured out like, I don't fit in here. Let's stop there.
Got it. So now talking about how do you, well, of course you have a busy agenda, I assume, but how do you try to balance it with learning, and if you need to move forward? So do you follow any specific podcasts or books that you try to give or follow, or any other events or stuff like that in sustainability or in product or related areas?
Because of my busy schedule and with two kids, I seldom have time to listen to podcasts nowadays and go to events, but I do prioritize reading. That's just one of my main ways of winding down and like getting me time. So every night I have a book on my side my bed. I'm reading a lot of like different types of book. I love a novel when I can get a really good novel and like just like couple off and not think about work. It could be books about self-development, psychology, how we as people work and think. up until like books about climate change, right? Just to see what was being written out there. But if I'm going to like point out one book that's meant a lot to me over the years, it's actually, and this is the old book in the modern time sense, it's mm-hmm. the book called Cradle to Cradle. I read that mm-hmm. during my studies, and that was one of the reasons why I had like this sustainability awareness growing. And this book is talking about the two different ways of, like today we use products, services, resources, and we have like cradle to grave, right? So in order for us to live, and have a green growth, we need to put things into new greener systems, and that's cradle to cradle, meaning like we reuse our resources, or we do think about it as services instead of products. So that is I think everyone should read that in if they really want to understand why the system that we live from today is a problem, and then that gives a bit of an understanding of where we should go in order for us to actually become a green society on a green growth, which I think is possible. It's just that we have a bit of a time limit to this.
Yeah, of course. I assume this answer from you and the book is kind of a good segue to this question. So, yeah, maybe you have already kind of mentioned it through the entire interview, but maybe just to make a small remark onto this. So the question is, what do you love about working in sustainability and doing Doki? So if you can summarize this in a short sentence, if you have anything like this.
That's a good question. Thank you. What do I love about it? Well, I guess that's a question that comes up when it's tough times, right? Because it is moving slowly, this the sustainability change. But it's extremely meaningful. And that's what I come back to every day. Like, if I would work somewhere else, would I actually feel that I contributed to the change that I believe in? No. So that's what I kind of always end up on. Like, the working in sustainability, working with Doki, I feel like I'm contributing my time, effort, and my skills in the best way. So that really motivates me to go on every day. So, yeah, that's a very strong positive feeling.
Yeah, and actually, because I haven't mentioned this question, but I will take the chance to do it, because it's like, what do you have any meaning behind the word Doki? Why did you call the company Doki? Oh, yeah. Is there any specific meaning out of it?
Of course. Now that's a story, and actually it leads back to our first like a startup weekend that we attended in 2014 when we like developed the main concept, and I think it was like 10 minutes before we were going to like present it on stage, we were like, okay, we need a name, right? Okay, what is the what's the associations that we want to? And at that time it was like really hard to talk about something as eco or green, or like, because it was really like put into a box, and I said like, oh, that's for those people that are like activists and like want to do, like back in 2014, right? So what we really wanted was a word that was more neutral and easy to remember. And we, Googling, we figured out like, okay, Doki means like being kind and conscientious and caring. It's an old English term, which is more or less maybe not used that much anymore. And then we're like, okay, that fits. And we went on stage and we presented Doki, and it's been there, from that time. And we've grown our brand around it, because people can't remember our little duck name.
Okay, so yeah, that's a good way to have a name, right? And as you mentioned, if it was neutral in that moment, that was important as well to convince more people to be on board with your idea.
Yeah, it was. It was important to make it something that is relatable to everyone, not just those that already believes in it, because we need every people to do more green actions on an everyday basis to increase the green growth.
Okay. And maybe as a last remark for today, I will ask you is there anything else that we haven't talked today that maybe you would like to mention? It can be a small quote or for reflection for people, or it can be some important information that you want to give apart from the regulations upcoming.
Something that just falls to my mind now that what I also think is very motivating about working in sustainability sphere is that I'm able to talk to people around in different companies that do believe and are also engaged in this. That, like, for example, you guys, right? And I've started thinking about you as are my extended colleagues, that we're working towards this vision and mission together. And that kind of makes me proud and happy, because that means that we're not just ducky 17 people, right? But we have this extended family out there with people that do believe in us and wants to do the same. So it's all about us partnering up and working together and like trying to figure out this together. So that, I think, is a good mindset for everyone feeling a bit alone, maybe in a bigger company working, trying to make change on the climate or sustainability sphere. There's people out here, then we can work together and we can make it happen.
Okay. Yeah, of course, that is part of the big mission, right? And if people need to feel like they are part of this big vision to change something, right? And to be part of those communities.
Communities, yeah. I think that's a good word. And we are a good, growing community.
Yeah, it sounds good. Yeah, so how can people reach you out if they want to join your community or get to know more about Ducky and maybe ask you for their name of their company if you can help them in 10 minutes before going to pitching?
Yeah. Oh, well, LinkedIn is always a good one, right? Even though my LinkedIn profile isn't that updated because of my two kids, but... of course, our website, Ducky Eco, there you can reach out to us. But yeah, LinkedIn's cool. Just PM there and it's easy to get to us.
Okay. So, thank you very much, Silje, for your time. And I hope you have enjoyed the conversations as I did. And well, definitely. We keep talking.
Let's do. Thank you very much, Ricardo.
Yeah. See you.
See you.
Thank you very much for joining us. We hope you have enjoyed the episode and get to know important tips and lessons to apply soon in your own journey. Feel free to share with your friends and colleagues. Looking forward to seeing you next time.